I'm Brian Hanna. Thanks for joining me for Better Than Monkeys, a production of WQLN. What is it that makes us, as humans, different, even, shall I say, better than monkeys? Well, if you look around these days, I'm sure you might just conclude to yourself, not that much. But if Charlie Darwin was right and humans and monkeys came down from the same tree, how is it that we are now so very different? I like to think it's because we have a few things going for us as a human species. We have the arts, we have science, and we have passion. And those are exactly the things that I think make us a little different and a little more special than our happening primate cousins. Hello everybody, I'm Brian Hanna, and today on Better Than Monkeys, we get to spend an hour with one of those wonderful humans making our world a better place through the arts. Betty Buckley. She fell in love with the theater at a very young age and never looked back. Years of training, hard work, and dedication led her to New York City and a spot in the cast of the Broadway hit musical 1776. Soon, she found herself in the role of Grizabella the Glamour Cat in the Broadway production of the Andrew Lloyd Webber hit musical Cats, for which she was honored with a Tony Award. In the years to follow, Ms. Buckley would grace many more Broadway and London musical productions, including Triumph of Love and Sunset Boulevard. But the Broadway lights weren't quite bright enough for Betty Buckley. The big screen was calling, and soon she was working with legendary directors M. Night Shyamalan, Woody Allen, Roman Polanski, and Brian De Palma. A natural in front of the camera, Betty also found success in the world of the small screen, appearing on television in AMC's The Preacher, the CW hit Supergirl, NBC's Chicago Med, ABC's Pretty Little Liars, and HBO's The Leftovers, The Pacific, and Oz. She also spent four seasons as Abby Bradford in the hit series Eight Is Enough. For Betty Buckley, music has always been a passion. 18 recordings, world tours, and Grammy nominations don't even begin to scratch the surface. On August 7th, 2021, Betty will bring her love of music and a group of her favorite musicians to Erie, Pennsylvania and the beautiful Mary D'Angelo Performing Arts Center on the campus of Mercyhurst University as part of the Mercyhurst Institute for Arts and Culture summer lineup. Thanks to Brett Johnson and our friends at the Mercyhurst Institute for Arts and Culture, I had an opportunity to sit down with the inimitable Betty Buckley, and I'm so delighted to share with you just a little insight into her career, her new projects, and most of all, her passion for life and music. Please join me in welcoming to this episode of Better Than Monkeys, the Betty Buckley. So please join me in welcoming to Better Than Monkeys, our new friend, Betty Buckley. Hello. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Brian. I want to know where you got this title of Better Than Monkeys.
Well, think about Charles Darwin, you know, and he said that we evolved from monkeys, right? So if that's the case, what makes us better than monkeys? Is it the fact that we can create a world around us full of art and music and literature, and they're still up in trees eating bananas? Nobody really knows.
Well, I wouldn't say better than. I don't
more
understand the whole
than.
Question. Well, I don't know.
Different
I don't know.
Than monkeys?
Different than monkeys, or are the same, and you know,
slightly different. Well,
slightly different.
Well, you've had a wonderful, illustrious career in the arts, and how did you get into the arts in the very first place?
My mother had been a singer dancer, and she always sang around the house and had a vast collection of great lady singers and Broadway musicals, and you know, she really inspired my love for the arts. My father also was the first person who taught me to sing. He had an old guitar, and we had a rickety old piano in the garage that he played both of those by ear and taught me South Dakota folk songs. He was from Lemon, South Dakota. And then my aunt was a dance teacher, so I studied dance with her from the time I was three. But I would say my mother is my peer, and I also sang in the youth choir at our local Methodist church, so that really got my heart going.
So it was a pretty standard beginning in the arts, and then at one point you just catapulted off into fame and glory. So how did that happen? Was it perchance?
Well, my mother took me to see a production at our local theater in Fort Worth, Texas called Casa Mañana of Pajama Game with the original Bob Fosse choreography. And I was very enchanted by the number Steam Heat. And it was the first time I'd seen anything like that. And I remember having what later I realized was an epiphany. Like there was this experience of this energy going up through my body, coming up through the top of my head, and turning around, looking back at me, and saying, "That's it. That's what you're going to be doing for the rest of your life." And it was only later that I realized what that was the musical theater. And so I was just smitten and told my mother shortly after that that I wanted to learn that number, Steam Heat, which is classic Bob Fosse with the girl and the two guys in black suits and bow ties and derby hats and little flat, tie dance shoes. And it just so happened that the guys who were the lead dancer of that show and the choreographer of that show, who also danced in the Steam Heat number, Ed Holliman and Larry Howard, opened a dance school in Fort Worth. And so I came home from school and told my mother I wanted to audition for the junior high talent show, because I'd studied dance since I was, 3 with my aunt. And I just thought it was so much fun to be in her recitals and stuff. And I love my shiny tap shoes and my, sequin costumes and stuff. I thought that was all really spiff. And so I told her I wanted to learn Steam Heat. And she had just read this ad in the Fort Worth Star-Telegram saying that these guys had opened a school in Fort Worth. They got tired of touring and doing, all these. They worked for Fosse a lot. And they decided to settle in Fort Worth, which was Ed's hometown, and open a school. So she called them and said, "My daughter wants to learn Steam Heat." And they were like, "Well, bring her in," right? So I went in and they were like, "Can you sing?" And I said, "Yeah, and so I sang the first line. They said, "No, sing it as loud as you can." So I went to the back of the studio and just let it rip. And they jumped backwards and said, "Oh my God," and it was such a great fortuitous thing to meet them, because prior to that, in school choir and the All City Chorus and stuff, they always put me on the back row and admonished me to blend in. And I didn't know why I wasn't blending in, right? So I thought something was wrong with me because I tried so hard to blend in. And my teachers, Ed Holliman and Larry Howard, just set me free. And I discovered there was a place for girls with big voices like mine, and the thing was, I was really short, and I was short and didn't grow till I was like 16 or something. So I was so tiny, but I had this enormous voice, and people thought that was pretty funny. And so then I got in the show, and they put me on right before the senior girls can-can line in our show. And I did what is classically called the 11 o'clock number, which is really my specialty in the musical theater. The 11 o'clock number is the penultimate song that ties up the theme of the show. And I did the whole number with the original Fosse choreography and hat tricks and everything. And the place went nuts. And after that, everybody kind of knew who I was. I became notorious as this like little bitty, they called me Little Bitty Betty Buckley with the big voice, and so my mother then entered me into every possible thing, and I became a professional when I was 15, working at Casa Manana. And then every summer I would do a show or two there. And so by the time I graduated college, I had a lot of performing experience, and I met these agents when I was a junior in college, and they signed me and then convinced me to move to New York. And I got my first Broadway show my first day in New York City,
Wow.
which was 1776, the musical. Yeah, it was pretty fortuitous. But Brian, I had this sense that I would sing on Broadway. And when I was 13, I was in my bedroom practicing, and I had this vision of who I would be and what my voice would sound like and how it would affect people. And then when I was 35 and I had done Cats on Broadway, they brought my recording of memory in for me to hear into my dressing room at the Winter Garden. And that 13-year-old vision came back to me, and I thought, oh, it took from age 13 to 35, but here it is, And so that was pretty cool. I just had this real sheer one-pointed knowing that I would do what I've done. And my father was very opposed to my being in show business, but my mother was a tremendous supporter. So that's more or less how it went.
So, do you think having an actual vision of what you want to be and sticking to it is key?
to finding some
Yeah,
success?
I think it doesn't have to be so much as a specific vision as just a feeling, a powerful feeling of what you love most. And that if you're willing to put in the work, and if you realize that you're not any finished product, even, if you have a modicum of talent for something, but more importantly, a love for something, and you commit yourself to doing what you have to do, which is to put in a lot of work, to learn everything you can, and to practice as much as you can. I mean, it's the classic, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, practice,
Right.
practice. But, I've been a teacher for almost 48 years or something, and it's very interesting. I've worked with a lot of super talented kids who aren't willing to do the work. Like, they'll encounter me in their 20s or something, or prepping for like trying to get into some art school or something, and I'll tell them, the truth about what their talent is and how lovely they are, et cetera, but that they need to learn this, this, and this, and this. And so some of them are really willing to make that commitment and do the work, and some of them truly aren't. And I've seen people with not so much talent who love the art form so much, they commit and invest and are. And literally transform themselves and their work by the sheer force of their passion, love, and commitment. And that's fascinating and startling to me. Like, I have this really powerful thing. A lot of people, a lot of professors and stuff in academia, these kids go to school, in these fancy schools. And some of those teachers or professors think it's their job to tell these kids that they can't do what they'd like to do. And that's nuts to me and completely unacceptable because no one can tell you what you can or cannot accomplish but yourself, not your parents, not your boyfriend, not your girlfriend, not your professors, not your friends. No one gets to tell you what you can and can't do but you. You set your own limits or you work through the obstacles that are standing between you and accomplishing what you want to accomplish. And it's really about that. Love, passion, commitment. That's what it's about. And I literally have seen miraculous transformations of kids that I worked with at a younger age who, if you'd ask me, does this kid or does this young person have a future in this, in show business or whatever it is they want to do, performance? And I would say, if I told you the truth at that moment, I would have said, well, I'm not so sure, but what I've learned, and very humbly so, I've learned, and powerfully so, is just according to this, the level of commitment, miracles of transformation can take place. And it's about that. It's about the willingness to work hard. That's it.
And there's so many wonderful stories of that being exactly the case for so many Broadway stars, so many actors, and so many performers. So that's a wonderful story, and you mentioned that when you first got to New York, you were hired right away to perform in 1776. Over the years, I'm sure you had to do your share of auditions. Now that you've been performing for so long and as your career advanced, was it still a long process of auditions?
It just depends. Sometimes people know who you are, know your work, and trust that. Show business is a it has a vast lineup of talent. So sometimes you have to go in and fight for the job, and sometimes they know going in they want you. So it's very hard to say what that is.
So it just depends on the moment for that kind of and the project.
And who the team is,
Now, you started as a Broadway actress. You moved into TV. You've done some films. You're now a quadruple threat with recording artist also. Do you have a preference, singing, acting, dancing, or do you love it all as one big part of your artistic life?
I have to say, I just like the, I love to work and I love to work with teams of people that I really admire and enjoy. So it doesn't matter if it's in the theater, the musical theater, film, television. It's really about what is the story, what's the contribution I get to make, and who's the team. The older I get, the more I just want to work with people I really trust, admire, and there's a joy getting to go to work,
Well, that's actually the lead into my next question. So you've worked with the greatest of the greats. Who are some of your favorites?
Gene Hackman is like one of my all-time heartthrobs. Like, I just think he, as an actor, hung the moon. I think he's like one of the great our greatest actors. And I got to work with him twice in Woody Allen's Another Woman. I didn't actually have any scenes with him, but I was on set with him the same days, and he was in a big scene that I was a part of and kind of the instigator of. And so I got to work with him there, and I also got to play his wife in Wyatt Earp, the Wyatt Earp movie that starred Kevin Costner. And so I got to be on two film sets with him, and I discovered that he liked my music and he knew about my music. And that was like, I was like, oh my God, Gene Hackman likes my music. I just love him and I love his movies and I love his acting. And, you know, I worked with Robert Duvall, who I really admire, and Wilford Brimley, who I really admired, in the film Tender Mercies. I got to work with them and learned so much from working with them. Recently I worked with James McAvoy, mm-hmm. who in M. Night Shyamalan's movie Split. I got to play opposite him in that. And as I played his psychiatrist or his therapist, and God, he's a nice man. He's just like so lovely. I mean, I've worked with a lot of movie stars, and McAvoy, well, besides Hackman, of course, but McAvoy is one of the most down-to-earth, charming, caring men I've ever met, and also just an immensely gifted actor who has a tremendous sense of craft as well. And it was a great collaborator. Like, my scenes with him were just joyous, both in a rehearsal process and on set. I remember one day we were shooting in Philadelphia, and there was a guy with a camera on set that we hadn't been told who he was and why he was there. And so we were rehearsing, and McAvoy was very protective of my sense of privacy and comfort level, and saw to it that the guy was disappeared pretty quickly. And then we found out that he was official. But poor guy. Anyway, that was a real blessing to get to work with him. He's a great, great guy.
Well, with all the award shows and the movie sets and the recording sets, do you still find you have fangirl moments where you see somebody that you've admired your entire career for the very first time and you get a little weak in the knees still?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I got to work with Robert Redford in a film, The Horse Whisperer. And the first day I saw him on set, you know, I made a complete fool of myself. I mean, to this day, it's like one of life's more embarrassing moments. And it's like, oh, for heaven's sake, Betty Lynn. I played his girlfriend that set up his horse clinics. And the role, I got to work with him through the movie, and that was just divine. And then I got this beautiful letter from him later on saying that the powers that be on the movie felt that he needed to be this loner heroic figure, and so they thought him having a girlfriend that he cheats with the leading lady was not conducive for his loner hero image. So they cut my role, and I was like, oh, okay, it happens, you know. And so then I didn't respond to that letter because I didn't know what I was supposed to say, right? And then later, this man that runs the Sundance Institute, he was like, Betty, Bob thinks you're mad at him. And I'm like, what?
Oh no.
And he says, yeah, Bob thinks you're mad at him. He never responded to his letter. And I was like, I'm not mad at him. I completely understood. It was so silly. Anyway.
So did you write him back?
I didn't know where to write him, so I just I let it go. But then I saw him at San Francisco Airport, and I went up to him and said, "Hey, Bob, it's me, Betty." I was never mad. I just didn't know what to say. He's always been very nice, and I really enjoyed working with him and for him. He was the director as well.
You're listening to Better Than Monkeys from WQLN NPR. You've worked with so many wonderful people over the course of your career, and now you're kind of doing something that's a little bit more for yourself. You're doing some wonderful music projects, and you've got a plethora of them available right now. If people want to hop on iTunes or anything, they can check out some of your recording projects. But when you come to the Mary D'Angelo Performing Arts Center, part of the Mercyhurst Institute for Arts and Culture season this year, you're going to be doing stuff maybe not necessarily from your Broadway career, but some stuff from your more recent projects, aren't you?
Well, I've recorded 18 albums with incredible jazz musicians that I'm really blessed to work with. In the past 10 years or so, I've been working with a brilliant pianist, arranger, composer named Christian Jacob, who is really great. And before that, I worked with this jazz ensemble for 20 years before that. And Christian is also a composer, and he's scored three of Clint Eastwood's recent movies. And so he's just a really amazing musician. And he and I collaborated on a story that I wrote, and he scored that. And that's in the process of becoming an animated short film that I'm producing. So that'll hopefully be out this fall. And he's just wonderful. And so, in fact, I'm going to L.A. to work with him next week to prepare for the Mercyhurst Institute for Arts and Culture concert and for their summer soiree party with my band, Christian, and my bass player, Tony Marino, who's worked with me for years, Matt Beck, the guitar player, and Dan Reeser. So I've been making these records with these amazing musicians for a number of years, like who knows how long, but I haven't done a concert for a year and a half due to the, you know, pandemic. We had a 2-week engagement at the Cafe Carlyle in New York in February, early March of 2020. And we finished the first week, and the second week was canceled. And I came back to Texas. So I haven't done a concert since then. And it's pretty daunting to consider going back into this. So I've been practicing, you know, training with my teacher and my trainer, trying to get back in the kind of having the level of endurance that it takes to do concert work. It's not an easy task. And so I'm going to LA to work with Christian. But yeah, we've been making these. We were for a while there, you know, making an album a year. But, you know, what I did during the pandemic is I created a video for the Biden campaign that I'm, you know, produced, that I was really proud of, with a beautiful children's choir, the SAE choir out of Southern California. And that's a really pretty piece that Christian also arranged of For the Beauty of the Earth and Jesus Loves the Little Children. And my friend Matt Amato directed the video. It's really beautiful, and I'm very proud of it. And then we've been working on this story that based on a true event that I experienced at a Judy Collins concert at the Cafe Carlyle. And so I haven't not been working. I've also been teaching for the whole year and a half. So I've just kind of diverted my creative impulses into other stuff. But yeah, for years, I did an album every year. So it's daunting going back into the concert world. So well, wish me luck.
We're excited to have you back on the stage. Now, you just mentioned a Judy Collins connection. She's actually a past guest on the Better Than Monkeys podcast.
Yeah, you told me that. So yeah, she's so lovely. I love her so much.
She is. And you have a little mini connection with one of the pieces of music you recorded called Both Sides Now. Joni mm-hmm. Mitchell recorded it. Judy Collins recorded it. You recorded it too. It's one of my favorite pieces of music, and it's really a beautiful performance that you give. Would it be okay if we share that with the Better Than Monkeys audience?
Yeah, sure.
Up next, a special treat here on Better Than Monkeys. It's a performance of Both Sides Now from her album Story Songs. Here are Betty Buckley and friends.
Roars and flows of angel hair and ice cream castles in the air and feather canyons everywhere. I've looked at clouds that way, but now they only block the sun. They rain and snow on everyone. So many things I would have done, but clouds got in my way. I really don't know clouds at all. Moons and Junes and Ferris wheels, the dizzy dancing where you feel. When every fairy tale comes real, I've looked at love that way. but now it's just another show. You leave them laughing when you go. And if you care, don't let them know. Don't give yourself away. I really don't know love at all. Tears and fears and feeling proud to say I love you right out loud. Dreams and schemes and circus crowds, I've looked at life that way. But now old friends are acting strange. They shake their heads, they say I've changed. Well, something's lost, but something's gained in living every day. I really don't know life at all. It's life's illusions I recall. I really don't know life. I really don't know life at all.
Betty Buckley and friends bringing us that wonderful performance of Both Sides Now. You can find that performance on her recording titled Story Songs. Betty Buckley will be joining us at the Mary D'Angelo Performing Arts Center, the Mercier Institute for Arts and Culture, on August 7th, 2021 at 7:30 p.m. in the evening. Betty, what kind of music can we expect you to perform that evening at Mercyhurst?
To be honest with you, I've had COVID twice, so I've been working really hard on rehabbing my lungs and my voice and stuff. So I'm going to be selecting the repertoire around what I feel the most comfortable with instead of turning myself inside out and upside down, you know, because I haven't, like I said, performed in concert for a year and a half. So I've got a set list, a repertoire list that I'm working with at this point, and I'm going to make all those decisions when I see Christian in L.A.,
Well, it's going to be exciting to have you here. Is this your first time in the Mary D'Angelo Performing Arts Center?
I think so. This was scheduled a couple of years ago, and then it got postponed and postponed and postponed because of the pandemic. So I'm grateful for their commitment to bringing, you know, rescheduling it.
Well, so. I will tell you that Brett Johnson is so excited to bring you in as one of the featured artists this season for the Mary D'Angelo Performing Arts Center, Mercyhurst Institute for Arts and Culture program season this year. We are so excited to welcome you to Erie. Can't wait to have you here. And we're really looking forward to whatever beautiful program you put together for the Erie audience. It's going to be wonderful to share your talents. And thank you for taking a little time to spend with us here on Better Than Monkeys today. It was so nice to see you, and wish you the safest trip and quick rehab from your post-COVID. How long ago were you suffering?
I had it in March after the, you know, when the whole place shut down, March 2020. And then I was diagnosed as being COVID positive again and had a shorter version in December of 2020.
Oh, my goodness.
And then, you know, got the vaccination and stuff since. So, but it's not fun. I think people should keep that in mind and wear their masks and socially distance. And this new Delta variant sounds pretty awful. And so people need to still stay very vigilant and stay on it.
Well, I know that Mercier's has some protocols in place to make sure that it's a safe and happy evening for everybody. So
good. Yes, they've told me that. Thanks. Yeah. Hey, Brian, I think y'all should really reconsider the title of your show because I'm not sure that we're better than monkeys.
There are many times I agree with you.
Especially these days as I watch what's happening in the cultural and political scene, I'm pretty sure that I'm right about that.
You want to know what's really funny about what you just said? So if you listen to one of the more recent podcasts, you'll hear that because I do a whole introduction. So if Charlie Darwin is right and we did come down from the same tree, what makes us better than monkeys? Which I follow up with, not much these days. You are
exactly,
not far off.
Exactly. I'm with you for sure. For sure.
Well, thank you so much for sharing some of your time. I know you're very busy, but it's been wonderful to talk with you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Betty. Take care. Have a great night.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks again to Betty Buckley for taking time out of her busy schedule to spend some time with us here today on Better Than Monkeys. And again, thank you to Brett Johnson and the staff over at the Mercyhurst Institute for Arts and Culture for making this interview possible. For more information on the upcoming August 7th, 2021 performance featuring Betty Buckley and friends, or any of the future events at MIAC, you can visit the website miac.mercyhurst.edu, or you can call their box office at 814-824-3000. In 2018, Tony Award-winning Broadway legend and 2012 Theater Hall of Fame inductee Betty Buckley released a brilliant live album she titled Hope, a mix of Americana, pop, rock, and standards. It's just full of inspiring music that will make you think and touch your soul. Well, Betty has graciously allowed us to use this title track, Hope, on this episode of BTM, a perfect way to end a wonderful interview with a true legend, Betty Buckley. Again, I'm Brian Hanna. Thanks for joining me for this episode of Better Than Monkeys, a production of WQLN NPR. Here to bring us to the top of this episode are Betty Buckley and friends performing Hope.
So last year I wrote Jason Robert Brown, the great theater composer, who I think is awesome, and you know, I wrote him last year and he sent me 3 songs. So I wrote him again this year and I said, Jason, do you have anything new? We're looking for new material. And he said, no. You know, he wrote me back, it's hard, Betty, it's hard, you know, coming up in this time period. And I'm like, I know. He said, I have 1 song, I'll send this to you. And it's a beautiful piece. It's called Hope. Come to sing a song about hope. I'm not inspired much right now, but even so, I came out here to sing a song, so here I go. I guess I think that if I tinker long enough, one might appear, and look, it's here. One verse is done, the work's begun. I come to sing a song about hope. In spite of everything ridiculous and sad, though I'm beyond belief, depressed, confused, and mad, well, I got dressed. I underestimated how much that would take. I didn't break until right now. I sing of hope and don't know how. So maybe I can substitute strength
strong enough. I got through lots of things I didn't think I could, and so did you. I know that's true. And so I sing a song about hope, though I can't guarantee there's something real behind it. I have to try to show my daughters I can find it. And so today, when life is crazy and impossible to bear, it must be there. Fear never wins. That's what I hope. See, I said hope. The work begins. What I hope. See, I said hope. The work begins.